Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Oh my God! I cannot believe this moment is happening.
When one of the coolest bands in hip-hop, The Roots, needed an accordion player last year, there was really just one guy to call. You guessed it, Weird Al.
But drag it out, Al.
People, we live in a world where it's okay for The Roots and Weird Al Yankovic to collaborate, yet that world still isn't safe enough for other accordionists to walk the streets. Today, the accordion comes out of the shadows when we hear about a new book called Squeeze This, and we'll open the phones. Later,
exile on the hill.
Daniel Rawson joins us, a member of the bands Grizzly Bear and Department of Eagles. He has a new solo EP out today. He'll play songs from it live in our studio. All of that on Soundcheck after the news. The rise and fall and rise again of the Scrappy Squeeze Box. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Today, a cultural history of the accordion. Plus, Daniel Rawson of the band Grizzly Bear plays songs from his debut solo album live in our studio. Remember that old Far Side cartoon Gary Larson captioned a drawing, "Welcome to Hell. Here's your accordion." Throughout its almost two centuries of existence, the accordion has experienced some extreme highs and extreme lows, becoming one of the most popular instruments in America and then one of the most ridiculed. Joining me here in our studio is ethnomusicologist Marion Jacobson, whose new book is called Squeeze This, A Cultural History of the Accordion in America. Marion, welcome to Soundcheck.
Good afternoon, John, and hello to all my accordion friends in New York and public radio land. And I just want to say how fitting it is that we're talking about Squeeze This here in Soho, which is so close to what used to be New York City's accordion district.
Really? I had no idea we had an accordion district.
The Squeeze Box answer to the Diamond District.
Wow.
Now,
I mean, it just goes to show there's been a huge swing in the fortunes of this instrument here in America. I mean, it's an immigrant instrument. You know, came with Central Europeans for the most part. How did it go, say, 1950, 1951? It's one of the most popular, biggest-selling instruments in the United States. 10 years later, nothing. Why?
I love that question, and I spend a lot of time in my book dissecting and doing a postmortem on the accordion's free fall into the dark ages of the 60s and 70s. But in order to understand the reasons for the decline of the accordion, you've got to understand the conditions upon which it rose to prominence in the first place. You know, the accordion was a latecomer to the party. It was invented in the early to mid-19th century and never got the chance for a Beethoven or a Mozart to crank out great classical repertoire. It was never caught in the conservatories and thusly depended on the support of independent operators, teachers, and studio owners, and direct marketing to people like you and me, very often door to door. So the accordion was vulnerable.
It was a pop instrument then, or a folk instrument, as opposed to a classical one.
Well, that's a question that the early advocates, teachers, and studio owners tried to address, and they really tried to position the accordion as the next great classical instrument. The advertisers.
Yeah, but Adolf Sachs tried to do that with the saxophone, and it didn't work there either.
The ads, some Excelsior ads showed our new style, as our new concert grand accordion, worthy of sitting atop its big brother, the piano. And unfortunately, in the 50s, that conversation didn't take you very far. As musical tastes changed and youth culture emerged with a whole new style of musical expression, few people wanted to hear about how the accordion could make you into a great classical player.
So did rock and roll basically undo all the goodwill that the accordion had built up in a century and a half?
Well, you know, there's a popular assumption that the Beatles and Lawrence Welk's kitschiness killed the accordion, but there was no one person or group of people that killed the accordion. It was sort of willed out of existence and by various constituents, but perhaps the accordion advocates themselves. They staged call-ins to radio programs that told accordion jokes. And, you know, unfortunately, they kind of positioned the accordion as a weapon in a culture war.
Mm.
Okay. This is good music. That other stuff is bad music with the guitar. And so, I talk about that in the book.
Right. So Elvis Presley is shaking his hips and shaking up parents all across America. Meanwhile, Lawrence Welk is offering a squeaky clean alternative on television with music that sounded like this.
A wonderful accordionist, Myron Florham, is in very good form this evening. Myron would like to give us a little boogie-woogie on his pancordium. Take it.
So 1956, Elvis Presley's career takes off. Meanwhile, the Lawrence Welk Show, this is their take on Boogie Woogie, courtesy of Myron Florham, who was an accordion player and also, Marion, a pretty well-known teacher of the instrument. And
yes, Myron Florham was able to please the classical accordion advocates. He was trained in that tradition, so to speak, and he was a noted teacher. And he sort of came onto the Lawrence Welk Show as an alternative to Lawrence Welk's playing. Lawrence writes in his autobiography that he didn't feel that he was a virtuoso accordionist, mm-hmm. and he needed Myron to draw in the aficionados of virtuoso playing. But he was never going to become a rock and roll idol.
No,
that role
no.
would be filled by Dick Contino, with mixed results.
Mm-hmm. So there were early attempts to
yes.
do rock and roll
Absolutely.
Accordion music, but the accordion is sort of fixed in the common image, the sort of our common American culture as a polka instrument. Now, how did that get started? Is that a result of immigration as well?
Absolutely. The waves of immigration in the 19th century gave us many gifts to music. The polka tradition, which is many traditions, the Slovenian mm-hmm. tradition among them that we talked about. It brought us the Italian wave of immigration, which brought us, on top of music, accordion know-how, the technology and the smarts to build and manufacture and market the instrument. And many other ethnic styles, Yiddish, klezmer music.
And it's important probably to say that all these individual styles, even in the sort of dark age of the accordion during the height of the rock and roll era, those subgenres, those niche markets continue to happen.
Exactly. When we talk about the death or the decline of the accordion, we're accounting from its disappearance from the mainstream
right.
media, from the sort of, you know, urban East Coast centers of culture. And we forget that the accordion and accordion-based musics and dance traditions remain strong in the Midwestern heartlands and in Louisiana and Texas.
In fact, a great example is Frankie Yankovic, who you write was crowned Polka King in Milwaukee in 1948. He continued to be popular through the 50s and 60s.
Here's a silly ditty, you can't sing it right away. Now here is what you say, so sing it while you may. Here's a silly jingle, you can't sing it night or noon. Here's the words, that's all you need, cause I just sang the tune.
Yoi, aiu neciu fiu zemi, ona de bella, ona de bella. Yoi, ona de bella, aiu neciu fiu zemi, ona de bella, de bella, de bella, ona de bella. I get dizzy, I get mumbo, when I'm dancing with my jum, jum, jumbo.
I'm the one you can have her. She's too fat for me. Too fat for me. Doggone fat for me. Oh, I'm the one you can have her. She's too fat.
That is Frankie Yankovic, the Polka King from Milwaukee. Too Fat Polka. Some of that was sung in Slovenian, the language of the immigrant community that he was from. Marian Jacobson's with me, ethnomusicologist, author of the book Squeeze This, A Cultural History of the Accordion in America. And also joining us now is Joshua Camp, who is an accordionist and co-founder of the band, the Brooklyn-based band One Ring Zero. Joshua, good to see you again.
Great to be here, John.
So we've been talking about, you know, how the mighty have fallen. You know, this very popular instrument kind of falls off the cultural table around the time of Elvis Presley and rock and roll.
Right.
When does it start to kind of gain currency again as an instrument of a kind of postmodern cool?
Well, I think in my own development, I picked it up in college. This would have been in the late 80s. And at that point, it was bands like the Pogues.
And from Ireland.
Definitely Tom Waits records from that period, mm-hmm. which Bill Schimmel is the accordion player on. I'm trying to think. Oh, and They Might Be Giants, of course. So those are the bands that got me thinking, you know, because I certainly didn't grow up in any sort of ethnic enclave of accordion at all. I'm from Virginia, and it was banjo and fiddle, and that's what I grew up with. So those are the records that made me start thinking about it as something I wanted to play.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing because when we think of 80s music, we do not think of accordion. We think of techno. We think of disco. But maybe the time was ripe as an alternative to the synthesizer saturation to have some really rich, like earthy sound going on.
Do you think, Marian, that that's what it was?
Well, that's what I say in my book. Yeah. I'm willing to hear opposite opinions, but I think that it was time to return to acoustic sounds, to instruments that were more bodily, you know, more embodied, more.
Well, you know, Guy Klusevic, who, by the way, comes from that same Slovenian community as Frankie Yankovic, but takes the accordion in a way different direction. You know, he used to talk when he was on the show as far back as the 80s about having that instrument on your chest. You know, it's strapped onto your body. It's a very physical thing.
It is. Stomach Steinway.
The stomach Steinway.
But it's more than a Steinway or a smaller version of something. It's really a unique experience to play one. Did you feel that after playing other instruments, the banjo, that it was special?
Here's another strategy I had. I thought, I'm tired of having to carry around keyboards, but I don't want to look like Jan Hammer, you know, with a keytar.
With a keytar, yeah.
And it seemed like a little more authentic, solution to that, to have a portable keyboard instrument. Because that was my background.
Right. So anyway, Guy Klusevic, who lives here in New York and has long been a part of the so-called, quote-unquote, downtown music scene, began commissioning a lot of these downtown composers to write for a project he called Polka from the Fringe. And, Marian, you write about this in the book as well. Some of these were polkas in name only. But what was the importance of that sort of effort, that kind of project?
Well, like his colleague Carl Finch from Brave Combo, I think Guy Klusevic was trying to sort of make us question what we think polka is and perhaps why we've relegated to the category of kitsch.
Hmm.
I don't think he was essentially making an argument that it should be taken more seriously or that we should take the accordion seriously. He just wanted to explore the range of associations that word brings, even if he didn't do that in the music, because you say they are polkas in name only.
Yeah.
And as a result, he's been able to reach a lot of audiences that wouldn't go for, you know, revamp polka or avant-garde polka or neo-Slovenian music. What do you think?
And now, I mean, you started, Marian, by telling us that the original makers of the accordion had hoped they were creating a new classical instrument. Now you've got people like Guy commissioning works, and it is, in fact, becoming a kind of new classical instrument. In fact, this is from Guy Klusevic's most recent album, The Multiple Personality Reunion Tour, and a piece called Breathless and Bewildered. Soundcheck listeners, we're talking about the accordion. Are you a friend or a foe of the instrument? What does the accordion mean to you? What does it signify to you as we talk about the cultural history of the accordion in America? You can give us a call. Join the conversation. 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692. Or leave a message on our webpage, wnyc.org/soundcheck. Coming up in a moment, we continue our conversation about the rise and fall and rise again of the accordion. We'll take your calls and your comments, and then later on in the program, Daniel Rossin of the band Grizzly Bear has a new solo album out. He'll join us for a live performance. This is Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer, and we're talking today about the extreme highs and lows of this instrument, the accordion. Joining me once again, ethnomusicologist Marianne Jacobson. Her new book is called Squeeze This, A Cultural History of the Accordion in America. And also here with us in the studio is the accordionist you're hearing in the background, Joshua Camp of the band One Ring Zero. Joshua, Marianne mentioned before the break the band Brave Combo, who were known for what was called at the time nuclear polkas back in the like late 80s, early 90s, out of Denton, Texas.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And it seems like that kind of, you know, coming out of the world music scene, that mm-hmm. seemed to be where a lot of the cultural currency of the accordion started.
I think so. I mean, they're in Texas, and Texas is an accordion state, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, San Antonio is I would consider one of the accordion capitals of the U.S., and I feel like, so I think they were tapping into that, and that tradition, of course, I mean, was there pretty strong the whole time.
Mm-hmm. What about the idea of, you know, the interest that we saw blossoming towards the end, Marianne, of the 20th century in world music? That was a good thing for the accordion.
Yes,
just as rock and roll earlier had been a bad thing.
The world music phenomenon brought to public attention various ethnic and traditional genres of music that happened to be accordion-based. Mm-hmm. Public radio had a big role in that, so we don't need to explain all this to listeners.
Well, let's put some of those listeners into the conversation. Delmore's on the line with us right here in Manhattan. Hey, Delmore.
Hello, John. Thank you for taking my call.
Are you an accordion fan? Are you a player or what?
I'm not a player, but I will say that the most profound influence that I can think of for the accordion is the apartment building, at least in New York.
Mm.
In New York,
Explain.
You couldn't have a piano in your apartment. You gave your kid an accordion.
Wow. All right.
And if you gave your kid an accordion, you also gave him the sheet music for Dick Contino's Lady of Spain. That was a huge influence,
yep.
Dick Contino, on the Arthur Godfrey show.
Can we just say, Delmore, that you're talking about parents giving their kids accordions and sheet music some years ago?
Yes. But now let me update. Well, first let me go back for a second. The largest influence for the accordion was the German occupation of Mexico.
Hmm.
And the Germans brought the accordion over to Mexico as well as beer. But a lot of that German immigration moved into Texas, which is why you have that influence from Texas and into Tex-Mex music.
Right.
And also, two words for the 80s, Clifton Chenier.
Mm-hmm. Great Zydeco musician from Louisiana. That, you know, the Germans also went to Argentina and Brazil, and in each of these places, Marianne, the accordion begins
exactly.
to differ.
Exactly. Delmore has a great point. The accordion tradition, accordions themselves and the repertoire, along with beer, and the beer hall were the great gifts the Germans gave the New World, gave the Americas when they came over. I did some field work in the southwestern heartlands of Texas, driving miles and miles through these cattle ranches, and there was really nothing there but church halls where you could have a polka picnic. And that music still survives today.
And you know what else survives today? Dick Contino's Lady of Spain. We'll be right back. Dick Contino's Lady of Spain, which at a certain point in our history as Americans was a kind of a cultural marker. Joshua, by the time you picked up the accordion, would this have been considered hopelessly old-fashioned?
Yeah, man, that guy's got some chops, by the way. I got into some of that stuff a little later after sort of the Pogues, Tom Waits kind of deconstructed, which you know, once I realized where they were coming from, but it was sort of backwards, I guess. I didn't start with hearing that music.
And Marion, you mentioned, one of you mentioned Bill Schimmel before, William Schimmel.
Yeah, well, he was the accordion player on those records in the 80s.
And
on the Tom Waits
amazing records. virtuoso who does a version of Lady of Spain,
yes.
Where it's just like...
And really is, you know, serious chops yeah. guy, yeah.
We're speaking with Joshua Camp, accordionist and co-founder of the Brooklyn band One Ring Zero. Marion Jacobson is author of the book Squeeze This, A Cultural History of the Accordion in America. Lisa from Westchester joining us on the line. Hi, Lisa. Welcome to Soundcheck.
You guys, I love NPR. I have so much to say. I'll try to be fast.
Do you love the accordion?
I love the accordion. I'm emotionally attached to it. I'm not musical. I can't do anything. My father played an Armenian by ear, the accordion and the organ. And he used to put, you know, eyebrow pencil on the keys to try to teach me. I never learned. I'm useless. Anyway, when he died, hi, Greg. He left two beautiful accordions, one that was all inlaid. We could not. My mother said, let's sell it. You know, we didn't charge too much. We tried. We could not sell it for anything. I said, you know what? I'll keep it. And then I met someone in my town at a softball game who's an accordion player and loves it. And I gifted it to him. And every time he sees me, he thanks me, but I find it preposterous that any instrument on the planet that can make music becomes obsolete or out of vogue. It's just insanity.
You should visit the World of Accordions Museum in Superior, Wisconsin, where 1,500 people have given away beautiful, workable accordions because they were seen as obsolete.
And this is in Superior, Wisconsin.
Yes, it's a museum, but it's a monument to the, you know, abandonment of the accordion by many people like our caller.
Yeah.
But I'm glad that you rediscovered it.
All right. We've got calls on the line, but we also have comments coming in on the webpage, and that means time for a stroll into the control room. Joel Meyer, what you got?
John, we have a lot of people who love the accordion pointing out the roles it plays in various different genres of music, from Cajun music to Chinese music to Latin music. You can look at all of them on the Soundcheck page at wnyc.org/soundcheck. Michael from East Harlem writes this: I just wanted to point out that the accordion's cousin, the melodica, has long had a presence in reggae and dub music. And John Sandy writes this: a big shout out to Weird Al for keeping it alive. I love the smell of the air that comes out of the accordion.
Read my polka face.
She's got to love nobody.
Can't read mine. No, he can't read my polka face.
She's got to love nobody.
Pa 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 polka face, pa pa polka face.
Ma
ma ma ma. Pa 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 polka face, pa pa polka face.
Hey!
Womanizer, woman, womanizer, you're a womanizer.
Yeah, that is Weird Al. Weird Al Yankovic with polka. Not poker face, but polka face. His version of the Lady Gaga song. We're talking about the cultural history of the accordion in America. Joining me now on the line is Steve Mackey, the guitarist and composer, and actually Grammy Award winner in these last round of Grammys. Hi, Steve.
Hi there, John.
What's your take on the accordion and its place in the musical pantheon?
Well, I am a big fan of the accordion. You know, I have a band which, if I had to, you know, put a label on it, I'd probably call it prog rock, but Rindy Eckert, our frontman, plays the accordion. And one of the reasons I'm drawn to the accordion is because, as a guitarist, I've always been the victim of a kind of conventional coolness. You know, the guitar, sure. You want to be the cool kid. You want to meet girls. Play the guitar. And I've always really thought it's really cool. It's so nerdy that it comes out the other side as being cool is the accordion. One of the early influences for me, I think, was the band Los Lobos.
Right.
I mean, that's a cool band, and the accordion sounds so mysterious in that band. And it always it's maybe, you know, led to Big Farm. I want a band with an accordion in it.
Big Farm being the name of your the band with Rindy Ecker that you were talking about.
Yeah.
All right. Steve, thanks for the call. Let me follow up with Marion and Joshua about this. You know, there is a point at which nerdiness has become kind of hip.
Is it nerdy or is it cool? That's the $64,000 question about the accordion. And the answer is yes. I think
yes to both.
A lot of
Joshua,
younger...
what about the picking up girls part?
Oh, I wouldn't know anything about that.
Right,
I would say
right.
It. You know, there's a certain amount of self-confidence required to get on stage with an accordion.
Yes.
I think maybe some other instruments.
But maybe you haven't been as touched by the Lawrence Welkian tradition that the accordion grew out of, or one of the traditions that it grew out of. People in their 20s and 30s didn't grow up watching their parents or grandparents watch Lawrence Welk, so perhaps they're not as affected by that image.
And in fact, 20-somethings would have grown up watching their parents spin They Might Be Giants records,
or
the band we mentioned earlier out of Denton, Texas. This is Brave Combo from their album Polkas for a Gloomy World. The nuclear polka band from Denton, Texas, Brave Combo, and a song called Buscando tu Corazón. And we're talking about the accordion, its ups and downs, and up again. Marion Jacobson's book is called Squeeze This, A Cultural History of the Accordion in America. Joshua Camp is accordionist and co-founder of the Brooklyn-based band One Ring Zero. We've got calls on the line and more comments. So back to you, Joel.
John, just one question from Anna from Riverdale. She writes, the accordion is such a beautiful, elegant instrument. It's most definitely not obsolete. I've been wanting to learn to play for a long time, but couldn't find anywhere near New York City. So, John, maybe one of our guests could help Anna out.
Marion?
Hi, Anna. Welcome to accordion land. You can do what I did, which is two things. I did a DIY thing with the accordion. I got the Mel Bay Teach Yourself Accordion books. The number two thing that I did was to find one of the last of the Golden Age teachers of yore. At that time, I was lucky enough to study with Charles Nunzio, who was one of the members of the accordion industrial complex who started the accordion revival in the 30s.
Didn't Eisenhower tell us to watch out for the accordion industrial complex?
He is no longer with us, but you can go to the Lower East Side to a place called Main Squeeze Accordions, and there, if you were lucky enough to find Walter in the shop, Walter Kerr, the owner, he gives lessons. And there are other teachers as well. Look on Craigslist and the internet.
I would think YouTube. I mean, you can learn everything else on YouTube.
It's extremely hard to learn accordion
unless
you have a piano background, you're going to have a hard time with the sideways keyboard thing. It's a little easier for those. Did you have piano, Josh?
Yeah, my background is piano. And I taught myself. I basically taught myself in front of a mirror. I just kind of
that
watch.
Training is definitely useful.
Now that's all right. That gets us to just a very quick point of clarification. We are talking largely, Marion, about the piano accordion, the accordion that has the keyboard on the right side.
Yes, and I assume that's I assume that's what Anna was talking about. She could have been wanting to learn Cajun button box or the Irish melodeon. You could easily find teachers of all of those wonderful, rich ethnic traditions in and around New York City. You might have to go to New Jersey, but
Norteño as well.
Email me some.
And so those,
go on Facebook page for the book.
Those are accordions that have buttons
on both hands,
as opposed
diatonic.
To having
and
a
they're
keyboard.
Also diatonic. Do you want to talk about what that means? Diatonic.
You're stuck in certain keys and not others.
I don't want to get sidetracked, but yes, it's a little different.
So now the book is called Squeeze This, A Cultural History of the Accordion in America. It is available now, and Joshua Camp's band, One Ring Zero, will be performing their latest album, The Recipe Project, at the Umani Food and Art Festival in Brooklyn at Roulette on April 12th, and you'll see and hear the accordion and all the other instruments that One Ring Zero bring. on that day, April 12th. Marion, Joshua, thank you so much for being with us on Soundcheck today.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
And as recently as 2010, the accordion hits the dance floor with this hit song, Stereo Love, by Edward Maya. Still to come, Daniel Rawson is best known for his work with the bands Grizzly Bear and Department of Eagles. He has a new solo album out, and he'll join us to play some of it live next on Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. For the past decade, we've known the musician Daniel Rawson as the member of two acclaimed indie rock bands. You're hearing him in the background in his role with the group Grizzly Bear. Rawson started his career back in 2000 with the duo called Department of Eagles. Today, Daniel is releasing a solo EP called Silent Hour, Golden Mile. And he's here in our studio with actually three different instruments in tow, none of them accordions. And he's going to play for us first the title track from the new EP. This is Golden Mile. It's Daniel Rawson live on Soundcheck.
Life in retreat, living on your knees. It's all right, you still light on your feet, but you can't run from me. Another silent hour, another golden mile. Another silent hour, another golden mile, another empty heart, another bitter smile, another silent hour, another golden mile. Crushing defeat. It's a lie run free. But those lives, they're precious to me. Come along, oh, leave me be for a silent hour, for a gold. For a silent hour, for a golden mile, there's bliss in this mess, there's madness all around, for a silent hour, for a golden mile, ah. Say the word. say the words in your mind before you shout out loud.
That's Daniel Rawson live on Soundcheck with the song Golden Mile. It's from his new EP out today called Silent Hour, Golden Mile, which comes from a line in the song that Daniel just sang for us. And Daniel, first of all, it's been a while. Great to have you back on Soundcheck.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
We spent the first half of our show today talking about the accordion, and it strikes me that that song, you know, that lilting 6/8 meter that you use in that song, it could have been a great accordion tune.
That's true. It's kind of Americana feeling, I
guess.
Yeah,
yeah. Now, you've this new EP is largely just you, your guitars, your piano. There are a few other musicians helping out here and there.
Yeah.
How different is this as a kind of a creative project for a guy who has spent the last more than decade in bands, in a band situation?
I mean, I write alone a lot anyway, so it wasn't that weird. But it was, you know, it was interesting. I had to sort of deal with finishing out the arrangements on my own, entirely on my own, without really anybody else's opinion, which is always a challenge because it's obviously hard to edit yourself. So self-editing in some ways was the hardest part of the whole exercise, but it was great. I mean,
you had taken some time off after a fairly intense period of touring with Grizzly Bear after the last record. I've always said Vecatimist. How do you say it?
That works.
Well, what do you say?
Vecatimist.
Okay. Some question among even fans of the band how that title is said. So how big a downshift was that, you know, from coming off the road and then just kind of like being by yourself?
I mean, it was pretty shocking. I mean, we'd been working pretty steadily since about, you know, 2006, pretty much, if we weren't touring, if we weren't recording, you know. So, it was pretty shocking. I kind of had to have a personal life in a way that I hadn't in a really long time. And all of a sudden, I was kind of an adult, and it was weird. It was a weird time. But it's all right. It's great. It's good to have time off. You know, you can't complain about that.
right. There is such a thing as being too busy, even for a hardworking band like Grizzly Bear. The reason I ask is because it seems right off the bat on this new EP with the song called Up on High, it seems like you're taking a kind of ambivalent look at that person up there on stage, you know, in the big room singing to me, as you put it.
Kind of, yeah. I mean, that song was almost, in a weird way, partially kind of about a writer's block in a way, sort of being forced in that position. And also kind of, I don't know, kind of joy of working your way out of it or something.
Is that what this project was for you? Did you have a kind of a
kind
block?
I went through, there was a phase of about 6 months or 8 months where I was having a really hard time getting anything done and didn't really know if I wanted to make music anymore. And so this was kind of, to a certain degree, a lot of these songs felt like exercises to kind of get myself going again. And I didn't necessarily intend to release a lot of it, actually. But they sat around. I mean, that first song, Up on High, was done in, I think, January 2010 or something. It's just been sitting around all this time, and I just decided one day, it's still good. Might be nice to share this. So that's kind of how that really happened. But
Let's do that. Let's share a little bit. This is from the EP. Daniel's performing live for us here in the studio, but this is from the brand new EP, Silent Hour, Golden Mile.
Grinding your teeth.
That's Daniel Rawson from the brand new EP out today called Silent Hour, Golden Mile. The singer and multi-instrumentalist from the band Grizzly Bear and the other band Department of Eagles, now with a solo effort, and he's playing some of it for us live in the studio, but I wanted to give you an idea to hear at least a little bit of what the EP itself sounds like. So that's mostly you doing all those parts?
Yeah, that what we just heard was. Yeah, I taught myself to play the cello badly, so there's a fair amount of that on this. And there's a little bit of lap steel on that song by this guy Scott Hirsch, who's a really great lap steel player.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, yeah, I sort of was trying to teach myself to play the drums and expand my palate a little bit.
Yeah.
So.
Well, now the first song you played for us here in the studio was the acoustic guitar. Now you're moving over to the piano to do Saint Nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And is this, you know, kind of along the lines of what you were talking about before?
I don't know. This one's a little different. Kind of hard to explain really what this one's about. It's kind of like a very secular spiritual song.
Okay.
Kind of, I don't know. But, yeah, it's just kind of an exercise in restraint to just kind of really keep it as sparse as I possibly could in a way with it, with this one. So,
all right, so you want to head over to the piano? We're speaking with Daniel Rawson, the singer and songwriter. Again, the EP is out today called Silent Hour, Golden Mile, and on it you will find this song, Saint Nothing, which Daniel is playing live on Soundcheck.
Don't know your name. But your voice so strong, it speaks through the glass, speaks through the ground. An empty phrase, a hollow. How long
Once again, that is Daniel Rawson live on Soundcheck with a song called Saint Nothing. Daniel moving from guitar to piano for this song, which appears on the new EP, which is called Silent Hour Golden Mile. And once again, Daniel Rawson, my guest on Soundcheck. This is a solo project from a musician that we probably know better from his work with the groups Grizzly Bear and Department of Eagles. And Daniel, what's the status of Grizzly Bear? Is there
We're recording right mm-hmm. now. Yeah, we've been working hard, so we're getting there.
Yeah. Do you have a deadline? You have a date in mind?
We have self-imposed deadlines. We have dates in mind that I can't share with you. I'm not allowed to.
All right. Okay. Now, when you were writing these songs, did you think you were writing solo songs, or did you think this might have been the next Grizzly Bear?
I don't think I really knew. I don't often think about those things in too stark terms. I think it gets confusing mm-hmm. for everyone. A lot of this stuff, like I was saying, I honestly didn't really expect to release a lot of it. But somewhere around last fall, I just kind of decided that they worked together very well. These five songs felt like a cohesive unit, and I sort of liked the quality that they had of basically for the most part being done at home. Yeah. And I've never released anything at all of my own, and I thought this would be an interesting way to do it since we had a lot of extra time.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned you sort of taught yourself to play the cello.
That's kind of an overstatement.
A little bit. Clearly you play the piano as well. I mean, do you have any kind of classical background?
I have music theory background as a teenager. I mean, I studied jazz a lot when I was a kid, so I have a pretty, technical background as a teenager, but I kind of gave it all up when I went to college and forgot most of it and came back to it as an adult. So it's a little easier to navigate those things. Cello is very hard. I wouldn't say I'm really nailing that one, but I'm doing my best.
Well, I know you grew up in L.A. There is a history of kind of big, almost orchestral pop music.
Sure, yeah.
From California.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
You were a Beach Boys fan?
Of course. I was a huge... When I first heard the Smile Sessions and Van Dyke Park Song Cycle when I was a teenager, that was definitely a huge moment for me. And it's had long-lasting consequences in my life, that obsession, so...
So did you hear when they eventually put out, first they had one version of Smile,
right,
a new version of Smile,
version, yeah.
And then last year they put out the kind of mm-hmm. the thing they created out of those old bootlegs?
Yeah.
Either of those do it for you, or do you?
I went and saw Brian Wilson when he did that first tour. We went to Carnegie Hall mm-hmm. with Fred, the other guy in Department of Eagles, when we were younger. But it was very satisfying to get to see him perform. That version of Smile felt a little ridiculous, but it was kind of just festive to see any version of it. This new one, I'll be honest, I haven't fully checked out the new kind of reassembled Smile, but mm-hmm. I'll always have an attachment to the kind of janky quality of the tapes where you never quite knew what fit together where, and that was kind of part of what I loved about it. It was so massive and so giant, but kind of a mess at the same time. It was great.
You made sure to mention Van Dyke Parks.
Yeah.
We say the Beach Boys and Brian Wilson, but it was Van Dyke Parks this master orchestrator and arranger.
Yeah.
So was he like a guy
I
for
would
you?
Say, yeah, no, I mean, Song Cycle, his first record, Song Cycle, is one of my favorite records of all time. I mean, just one of the most, nothing sounds like that record and nothing ever probably will ever again,
Mm-hmm. Well, you got your own song cycle now here with this new EP called Silent Hour, Golden Mile. Daniel Rawson, back to work with Grizzly Bear, but I'm glad that we had a chance to hear some of your solo stuff. Daniel,
absolutely.
Thank you.
Great,
this is Soundcheck. Thank you. Silent Song is the name of this from Daniel Rawson, and that's going to do it for Soundcheck today. We've got just a few tickets left for our next Soundcheck in the Green Space with violinist, singer, guitarist, multi-instrumentalist Andrew Bird. That'll be March 30th, 2 p.m. Just a few tickets left. Go to wnyc.org/thegreenspace to join us. Tomorrow on the program, we hear how new regulations are changing the way prison inmates can access and listen to music. Plus, David Gedge and his long-running band, The Wedding Present, join us in the studio. The English band have a brand new album called Valentina. We'll hear that tomorrow on Soundcheck. Our technical director is Irene Trudell. The program is produced by Katie Bishop and Greta Cohn. Our senior producer is Joel Meyer. We had help today from Chris Nolan. I'm John Schaefer. This is Soundcheck.